Oh, hey.
Now let's invite the other guy. Okay. Channel, general. Okay, I didn't hear him say anything this time, but I did add wherever Gurek here. Uh-huh. Don't know how to get rid of this dumb video window that it is now showing me. I guess I will just minimize it as much as I can. There we go. All right, I think we're recording everywhere at
even
this
OBS?
Point. OBS says it's recording.
Okay. So we get started then.
Yeah. Okay. Let me get an actual thing up. I lost, of course, my little text document that I had. Oh. The energy has been sucked out of my body.
And like, if I suddenly go running out of the room at 3:30, please don't think it's because of anything. Just it's the time. I'll be like,
okay. Oh, well, okay. Let me look at what we'll just say.
You're fine.
3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome everyone to frankly a cursed episode of Monday Night Magic. I don't know how many different technical issues we've had to record audio. So hopefully through the 3 different sources of audio recording technology we're using right now, something will work. That's all I'm going to say. So welcome to another episode of Monday Night Magic. This week, your host is Tom, like I guess every other week. No, not every week. There's a time I haven't been here. Never mind. So I am Tom, and joining me we have Vincent.
Hello.
And I'm waiting to hear it, and also Brent.
I'm Brent.
He is Brent. All right, guys. Okay. There's Magic news to talk about. We'll start with that. You guys actually played some Thunder Junction. Why don't we start with that, and then we can go into some dad value for playing Magic the Gathering online. I'll say this is your chance to talk, either Vincent or Brent.
Vincent's a better Magic player than I am, so I think he should give the first impression of Thunder Junction.
It's very polarizing. I seem to be either doing really well or really poorly in drafts. At the very least, I know I don't want to draft red-blue because it's a pain in the butt, and like I went like 1-6 across 2 drafts with it. And like none of the cards I have seem to do anything. But I've been doing a bunch of other things. Part of it's just that there's just so many high impact cards and like there's so much interaction. Because I need to have so much interaction for crimes to work. And then the bonus sheet is all crimes. And then it just gets annoying. It feels like that some of these rules that they have about how removal was bad and how things are... There isn't that much interaction on the other side of the board. We're in place for a reason.
So, Brent, why don't you pitch? Because I know you did some draft, yesterday. Do you have some of the same thoughts, or because I know Vince was telling me more about all the random stuff that gets added with the sheets, or I guess the different extra cards you might run into in a draft.
Yeah, I agree with Vincent. It's definitely targeting heavy, and there's a with my sample size of 1 draft, it seems like there's a bonus for targeting your opponent for committing crimes, and so since I drafted a green white deck, I was not heavy on the crimes theme, and I think that might have hurt me more than helped me with what
it
I was trying
on
to.
What you get like. My 2 paper events, my pre-release sealed and my paper draft, have both been green-white, and they've both been good. Granted, both of them had both the rare mount that makes angels and the 4/2 that like draws you a card when it's saddled, when it gets tapped, but has vigilance. So, and then that draft actually did get to manage to go curve 2-drop the mount and then 3-drop Wily Gene.
Wow.
And that's as good as it sounds like.
I gotta look up what Wily Gene's the green white legendary.
Yeah.
I was tapped to gain 1 life and draw a card. Yeah, that seems like a decent card. That seems like a pretty decent card. That seems like a decent card. But yeah, no, I like I said, sample size of one. I liked it. I liked the draft. I mean, I only went 1-2, but I still enjoyed it. And seeing the synergies that players were able to put together and, you know, trying to build their decks. Yeah, it was great. And I played one opponent who was Grixis, but it was mainly more red-blue. And the amount of things he was able to get going with the, you know, two spells a turn, it was just the amount of triggers he had going was awesome. Like, I was helping him keep track of them because of all the things that he had out.
Yeah, like, there's just so much crime stuff, and there's so many different triggers that can happen. Even once per turn, for most things, it's just annoying. And I can't imagine what playing one of those decks in paper would feel like as opposed to Arena. I mean, I was helping my opponent who had a crime deck, and they were just doing all kinds of things, and I was, like, being too nice and, like, keep telling them all their triggers and stuff.
I think
No, that's fine. I think that's good, Vincent. I don't think that's too nice. I think that's good. I think your opponent appreciates that's being a good Magic player.
Mm-hmm. Especially just, like, a random F&M.
Yeah, exactly.
And for the excessive, I guess, removal is, do you feel like the issue is the whole kind of kerfluffle with the big score kind of changing from what probably was initially planned versus being an aftermath part? Like,
I mean, that certainly didn't help. I mean, it has a bunch of bombs. Like, then again, I don't know what was going to be on the list before this, like the generic, like random cards they were going to put in. And whether they're going to be more impactful than Torpor Orb and or the random bombs like the dinosaur or whatever. In my green-white deck, I had the paper draft, I had the 4-mana 5/5 that makes food. Yeah, I only cast him once.
The Bristlebud Farmer guy?
Yeah, I only cast him once in a game where it really didn't matter because that was a game I went the turn 2 Mountain to turn 3 Wily Gene. Yeah, but otherwise, like some of my first couple arena drafts, like one I had, I picked one pack one collector's cage, and that was dumb. And then I like pack one, pick one the next draft, the hostile investigator. That's dumb, especially when you combine it with a bit more discard.
Oh, yeah, you're not kidding.
Yeah.
Hustle Investigator is okay. Yeah. 4/3 Ogre Rogue Detective, 3 and a black mana. When it enters battlefield, target opponent discards a card. Whenever one or more players discard one or more cards, investigate. This ability triggers only once each turn.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That seems like that was worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. Seems like it's worth playing, maybe.
Yeah. Just maybe.
So I guess, Vincent, since it sounds like you played maybe more overall drafts, what archetypes, I guess, have you found to be the most effective or maybe easiest to get into or I guess easiest to, I guess, convert? Like, I picked this and I actually was able to make a decent deck.
I mean, I haven't played that much of any one particular archetype. Like, I think I've done, like, 3 blue-black base crime decks and, like, one I did well, one did badly, and one's in progress. And is doing decently. Like, I think the blue-black shell is decent as long as you get the right pieces. Enough of the ravens. Enough, like, random stuff that triggers it. Like, I'm assuming that, like, the one drop that, like, shrinks a creature, the blue one that draws a card, the, like, -1/-0, or -4/-0 if you can turn out a lot, draw a card, is a glue card for a lot of different archetypes. It's good for the crimes deck. It's good for the spells deck, assuming that deck is one that actually works. It's an instant, so it's something you can cast if you're doing the no casting spells on your turn deck. Yeah. And it's just so efficient and, like, so good.
So you said, like, take the fall. You said it's kind of a key common. Any other commons there that you would always, I guess, be taken pretty high?
I'm not sure, like, what... Like, there are generic good cards, like, decent removal. Like, I found Death's Due to be fine. I'm not... Desert, yeah, I'm not sure. The -2/-0 for 1 and a black instant gets an additional -1/-1 for each desert you control. Yeah, that seems like a fine removal spell. I mean, especially compared to Thundercell, though, which is god-awful. That's the burn spell in red that's 2 and a red instant, deals 2 damage to a creature +1 for each other spell you played this turn. It's like it's rare if that even gets, like, 3. I mean, compared to Galvanize from the last set, which is like relatively easy to get to five, I could never ever see you getting five in this one, because that would be like three other spells.
That would be a lot, yes.
And with the, I didn't look at the chart to see what the actual average toughness was of creatures.
Yeah, there's a lot of three threes for three in this set.
Yeah, you got a lot of three plus butts. So yeah, that doesn't help at all.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently if you actually go to 17 lands, like green is the big color that everyone likes. They finally decided they want to make green relevant and standard, and to do that, they're just going to give it raw stats because that's all they can give it, because you can't give green anything else, apparently, because of stupid color pie. So they're just going to give it stupid 6/5s for 4 with multiple upsides.
Stupid color pie. You like the color pie. Don't act like it's stupid. Color pie's there for a reason.
Green can do something other than stats and be interesting, but either you just give it dumb stats or you give it... Or it's bad. Like, there's got to be a better option.
What about if you make a plant spider that looks like a huge cactus?
That's just raw stats. That's a 6/5 for 5 that draws you a card.
I like it. Because this is a cactarantula.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even like get a discount on it. Or like the other
one that's like a 7/7 for 6. You can also discard it to get a land.
Yeah, that armadillo.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it that much, but yeah.
Oh, I saw it. I saw it. I saw a lot. I had two different opponents play that card. I was like, what is this? Yeah, it's Pine Woods Armadillo. 4 green for a 7/7 with reach and ward 3. And if you pay 1 in a green and discard it, you can search for a basic land or desert, reveal it, put it in your hand, shuffle, and gain 3 life. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Why not? Yeah. That's a lot of... That's pretty good value there. Just all the usually value. Usually with the land chuckers, usually the actual power toughness to the casting cost is not great, and that one is still very decent for it.
Oh yeah.
Okay, for you guys, with how much a saddle or saddle up did you end up seeing play?
There's a lot of saddling being done because you just get it for free on most of these creatures, like the. Like a 4/2 for 3 is an awful, then give a trample like the 4/4 for 4 with vigilance that can give your other things counters. That's just free value on top of something.
Yeah.
Then there are the dumb ones like the mole that mills you for 2 and then gets +X/+X with a number of creature cards in your graveyard. Because again, that's just a bear that has a massive upside that can attack for 10.
Yeah. I played a green-white, tried to do mount. I failed, but I tried to do mount, but I found mounts were pretty cool. They worked out well.
Yeah. But that mole is also good in the green-black deck, which I think is probably the most fun deck because there's the release of armaments, which is basically your new spider spawning, but it makes 2/1s instead of 1/2s.
I mean, Rise of the Varmints?
Yeah. Then there's just a lot of greenback black value stuff, like the one that's like return a creature from the graveyard to the battlefield and return a permanent from the graveyard to your hand, so that's just an instant 2/1 and you get part of it for free. Then there's the other green black 2/1, the back for more from the bonus sheet, which like instant speed reanimates a creature and has it fight something, so that's could be like a 3/1 and it's at least 2/1.
I had not seen you mention
Grave Digger for some reason, because we needed that too.
I had not seen the Stubborn Burrow Fiend. This is that mole-esque creature. It's a badger beast mount. That is nuts.
Mm-hmm.
2/2/2/2. That is good. Okay.
Yeah, part of me just wants to actually put that in a descendant, make it green black instead, and get screwed by Rest in Peace and Unlicensed Hearse and all the other graveyard things. In standard.
Good, that's what you get.
Standard Pro Tour next week, so hooray for that.
And they're doing a great job of advertising that, because I had totally heard of it before
This is a smaller one. There's no Magicon attached to it. They're just doing it in Seattle, so they'll have like coverage and stuff, but they don't need people to actually go there. So I can understand them being a little more like subdued about it. But if you go to the mothership, they're talking about it a bit there.
what if I was like a just a common Magic player, you know, as opposed to the expert that I am, what would ever make me go to the Mothership website?
Because you see an ad for it on the rotation in Arena.
To say, go like, check out the website and be like, no, I'm a busy guy.
I mean,
I feel like there's so many ways of getting like Magic news, you know, strategy. I guess I'm not sure what brings me to any of the official Magic websites these days. I mean, the lore part is good. So I guess that part I could see. Okay.
The lore, or you want Morrow's articles, or you want the competitive stuff that they've been doing a decent job with Metagame Mentor from Frank Karsten, and then Corbin's been writing the week that was. Then there was another article.
Oh, so there's actually like those kinds of articles on the main Mothership site.
Weird. They're on magic.gg. They're linked on the Mothership, but they're not like in the magic.wizards domain, which is weird.
So what is magic.gg? Is that still an official Magic website?
Yes. It's just that they separate like the normal articles. Like there's magic.wizards.com that has like your preview articles. That's where like all the stuff around the set will go. That's where Morrow publishes. It's where the Arena patch notes and such always show up. Then there's magic.gg, which is where they have the competitive stuff articles. There's Metagame Mentor, which is the closest thing to strategy you have on the Mothership these days. And then there's Week That Was, which is kind of like a competitive recap of each week.
Okay, I see. The only link I find on the magic.wizards.com that goes to magic.gg is the little tiny esports link at the top.
There should be links to articles. I'll pull up the Mothership myself and see like what's at the front page. So I'm going to magic.wizards.com/en/articles.
Oh, so if I click on Manfield Rips the Trophy, I don't know what any of that means. It'll take me there. Okay. It sounds like something like it'd be in a porno. I feel like
Manfield Rips the Trophy.
Like if like, I see the Poppets pre-order outlaws, the Secret Lairs thing, the weekly MTG link.
I guess there's the competitive.
I mean, so weird. I'm making sure that we are both saying the same thing with the Mothership. So I'll drop a link in chat here.
Yeah, I'm on magic.wizards.com, but they do have a competitive tab under our games, which is MTG Arena, Tabletop, Magic Online, and then competitive, I guess, is felt to be like a separate game in their view, which is interesting.
What did you say was?
Maybe this is just a little point into how they see competitive.
Oh, I think the fact this page hasn't noticed how the MPL is still a thing according to this.
So really? When's the last time they updated that?
Yeah. They also haven't updated the MTGO link to go to Daybreak. Though it does have the redirect otherwise, but like, yeah.
Well, that does take humans to do, so that might take a while. It's on the list.
It might be further down the list now that they're getting... Isn't Wizards getting a new president?
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize that kind of stuff had to be like announced to the FTC. I thought that was where there was like a FTC thing saying, oh, I'm leaving.
Yep.
All right.
I mean, they're a publicly traded company, so they have to do stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess I just don't know like what I don't know much about business. I don't know what goes into being a publicly traded company versus like an LLC, but I didn't realize that those types of staffing things had to be like announced ahead of time, which seems crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they had to announce their layoffs ahead of time. Just saying.
I mean, they kind of did, because I mean, they did it before they notified the people that they said layoffs are going to happen, and then they started laying people off.
Feels great. Because President Lady knew she was going, because at least her name is in it. At least have the names.
I mean, Wall Street doesn't care about random Joe Schmo, even if we know who they are. They care about presidents and CEOs and other executives because those are the only people that matter to them.
True. True. They don't matter to me, though.
Doesn't make it right.
I'd rather know more about Phoebe Wall, who apparently is doing the art on some of the new secrets, which looks very good. Secret Lair featuring Phoebe Wall Foil Edition. Swords of Plowshares, Fairy Artisans, Dockside Chef, Alila Artful Provocateur, and Door of Destinies.
Ooh. Now you have me.
Was pretty meh. Like, I didn't notice much about it.
Pretty meh. By meh, do you mean like it sold out really quick?
Apparently most of it did.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, exactly. It sold out really. It was really kind of. Once again, I get there like, oh, we're not going to print the demand because we want to get them out quicker to you guys. But they sold the artist series from Rovina Kai. I'm probably mispronouncing it. With kind of like the sketch of those ones, that one like sold out super quick.
Oh,
and then the Fallout
tarot card thing.
Yep, the tarot card, and then the Fallout special. Those did, and then they now the only ones left are dioramas or Phoebe Walls. That's it. All the rest of them are sold out.
Yeah.
So the way to grab onto FOMO, Wizards. Good job.
Mm-hmm.
Way to go.
Congratulations. Yeah, I feel like that's a huge loss.
I don't know how much of they actually had of everything, if it was just a lot, and they're still trying to figure it out. Like, I didn't notice, like here are the cards you have to have in this batch or anything, or any dumb errors that showed up.
No. I don't remember reading anything about where there were
sorcery spell counter spells in this batch.
Yes. That was pretty cool, though.
Yeah, Secret Lairs are not for me. I think that's what we've accepted.
I can give that. That's why they're Secret Lairs, right? You don't have to get them. You don't have.
Yeah.
The complaints I have heard, not just on this one, even when it was the Cats and Dogs or others, are even individuals who get the emails like once they've been released, the window for some of them getting, they're like, I can't even get out of there. You know, like I'm working and you can't get out of your job to, you know, you can't place your order then. And sometimes, let's say they're working a 9-to-5, by the time they come home, it's already sold out. And they're like, I didn't even have an opportunity. And then what's getting them? Bots, reseller, they're just grabbing up everything. And then, it's kind of...
Hey, Brent, don't worry. On the magic.wizards.com front page, the sale ends for the Secret Lair Fallout ones in 7 days. So you've got plenty of time. It says right there, sales end in 7 days. All three of the four links that they have on there are all now totally sold out. The only one left is the Phoebe Wall one.
Exactly. I'm gonna order now
because I love that set. They're all gone.
It's gone. No, that's cool. That's fine.
But I mean, if like they lasted a week, I don't think it's that bad.
But I think that's just a few of. I think like the tarot ones and the fall specials. I think were they a day or even 2 days?
I'm not sure. I wasn't paying enough attention.
Yeah, I mean, how do you track that? Does it tell you when they went on? They don't really say when they went on sale. It just tells me that there's 7 days, 10 hours, 52 minutes, and 46 seconds left to order it. That is.
It went up like each one's generally up for a month, but I don't know when.
Was it? Yeah, I'm trying to think when it actually. So today's Sunday, the 21st. So it would have gone on Monday, right? Was it the 15th? Did they go up to 15th? That would only be 2 weeks for it, though, because they missed the equinox. They missed the eclipse, right? So the name was all kind of bogus about it.
Secret Lair, my eyes hurt. Why do my eyes hurt? Google search.
Let's see if I can find when the actual date. Nah, it's not. That's not. We have better things to talk about than when Secret Lair was released and instantly blown
somewhere
out.
Where there aren't Secret Lairs.
Like, Tom, where is there not Secret Lairs? And you can tell us
where there is bad value when dad's like, oh, it's at Target. Can I get it at the Dollar Tree? That type of dad value.
Yes.
I can't see Brent because we're doing this on Discord right now, but I know he's nodding his head vigorously because as a dad, you're like, no, I want the non-Crayola version of that marker that will last 18 seconds when you use it. Because the tip on it is like as thin as a human hair. I'm not sure how to do that.
Yep, but you're pretty, you're right there. So what's dad value you're going to share with us, Tom?
There's lots of dad. So we talked to, apparently the four types of magic you can play. We have MTG Arena, We have Paper Magic. We have Competitive. And then we have MTGO, the original Magic the Gathering on.
Oh.
And I feel like it's been, you know, no developers be perfect, but ever since they handed over to Daybreak, I feel on the average, they have just been crushing it, just doing a great job of, I know, Vincent, you kind of mentioned all the sort of backlog of cards getting added back in.
Yeah.
Getting new sets, I say in faster, especially some of the Universe Beyond stuff. But I was kind of curious as they announced this new Commander toolbox. And this led me down the little rabbit hole of, if I'm new to Magic the Gathering Online today, like, what do you actually get? Because I feel like I've had an MTGO account for a very long time at this point.
Yeah.
So I guess I didn't realize there was just a base online starter kit that just by making a free account that you get what amounts to 1,828 cards, which I thought was kind of bonkers.
Yeah, again, they recently upgraded this with the release of Thunder Junction. That's the key. Otherwise, exactly. They had other things, but now they have more.
Yeah, which I think is cool. I mean, it's mostly commons, but you actually get some mythics, you get some rares, some decent cards in there. And then if you want to upgrade your account, which previously you had to pay, we're amounted to $5 to get, I'll say, a real account. Because I think you could not trade or chat.
Yeah.
$5.
Yeah, you can't trade, you can't chat. You might not be able to play most types of events.
Wait, you can't chat? Does that mean your opponent can't chat with you? Or is it just a one-way chat? Because I can see that as a
I would benefit. Pay another $5 just to mute the chat. You can just close the window. No, they're somehow still going to get to me and yelling at me net deck when I played one single basic land. In our first game where they have not, there's just physically no way they can know what deck I'm playing. Oh, here with this. So Daybreak, you're leaving money on the table. Give me like a selective mute option for my chat. Because my skin is thick, but at some point the racial slurs can crack through that. So I was quite excited for the current Magic Online account upgrade. Like you said, kind of with, they did not want to miss Thunder Junction. So there is some caveats to this one. Just if I'm just looking at numbers, it's impressive. Look, so it's 5,261 cards are in the $5 account upgrade kit. We get 2,787 commons, 2,372 uncommons, 102 rares, and no myth. This one again, total value. I am a little curious. I'm not sure if this is what is actually happening or if it's just that they messed up on their Moxfield link. But if you go to the actual MTGO website, you can pull up a list of all the cards that are in these sets. But they also have a nice link to all of them at Mox, which is it the most popular deck building site? Or I'm not sure why they specifically work with Moxfield, but
I guess it's just something that they had. Yeah.
Okay. So there it got a little confusing because the cards listed on their Moxfield collection, some of those are border variants. So a lot of the times they would be sort of the old original, like revised style border variants. And those are often worth much more than the not variant ones. So I'm not sure if that was just a mistake in how Moxfield parses the card names or if you really will actually get the old card frames with that.
Mm.
And unfortunately, I can't test that because I guess I could make a new account just to get this.
Yeah, we can
trade them to myself.
Do you want to get into that now or do you want to keep talking about this?
What was that?
Do we want to get into that now or keep talking about what's in these things?
Well, we finish talking about what's in these things, then we can talk about the weird
there.
So that was just saying, that's why I haven't really been able to check this yet. Said I'm willing to wait till June.
Yeah.
Because Brent's just like, why in the world is Step Through worth like $7? I was like, that is weird. Why is that? And I realized it was because it was the old border variant that I was linking to. I'm like, then we found out that was the reason for pretty much all of the higher price cards in the upgrade kit here. So I'd say this maybe puts more of a spotlight that, I mean, you're getting just a huge amount of cards for $5. I mean, so if you just want to play kind of kitchen table magic, I really can't say there's a better value than a MTGO account with the $5 upgrade. If you just want to play with your friends online, that is nuts how much stuff you get you're getting about 7,000 cards, roughly for $5. And I feel like you can't overestimate the value of, this would be for Arena or MTGO, is that it sorts the cards for you. Trying to keep 7,000 cards in any sort of semblance of a usable form at home is doable, but takes more willpower than I have. So I feel there's value to that as well. But the Commander's Workshop kit, I think here there is some cards that truly are valuable, but again, looks cool. If you're just reading, be like, 2,000 cards. You know, I have my online account upgrade kit. This is less than 5,000, so I'm not excited yet. But cool breakdown of the rarities is 14 commons, 45 uncommons, 1,613 rares, and 320 mythic. That just sounds fun to say that. And I didn't say this set is $39.99 for the Commander Upgrade Kit. Probably the best cards value-wise are you get some of the Artifact Lands. So Great Furnace and Ancient Depth there. But Brent and I were talking beforehand, it feels weird for $40 that you're getting cards like Academy Rector. What were the other one? Wheel of Fortune,
yeah.
Yeah, just kind of, Ulamog, stuff like, it's kind of a crazy, I know they're worth less digitally, but it still feels good. I'd be like, I actually put a snapshot in our Discord and be like, I bought the kit. And also just like, bloop, a little window pops up. Ooh, we're adding 2,000 cards to your collection. I'm like, I like that. This is a really cool, this is less than a collector's booster, right? How much is like a collector's
booster? They're like $20 each, so less than two collector's boosters generally.
Less than two collector's boosters, it just kind of bloop, you get all this stuff. That, to me, feels really good. And I feel like this has to be, I have not played Commander on MTGO. I feel like this has to be a huge, there's going to be a lot of maybe new players trying out Commander because of this, and that is good for people like me who have played a long time but are not very good. So I'm not going to hopefully get smoked by, highly competitive EDH decks every time that I'm playing.
Yeah. But the problem is that MTGO in general is a very experience-biased platform. It's hard to get someone to go from paper to MTGO or from Arena to MTGO, unless you already know that MTGO is a thing and have been since before Arena.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's what the kind of, this, as you just mentioned, Vincent, kind of, updating the, what I get with the new account, what I get with this $5 upgrade kit. I feel it's being kind of more, I feel like they need to do almost like more advertising or more community outreach, where this is where I wish they still had like Wizards Play Network stores and stuff. Be like,
I mean, they have WPN stores, but they don't necessarily want to directly advertise MTGO, because unlike Arena, which is more of a complimentary thing with to paper, because they don't focus on the same formats and they're generally easy to cross over between the two, MTGO is trying to be a replacement for paper.
Yeah,
why would it matter? I mean, they're still selling me packs.
Instead, WPN stores.
If you're buying packs, paper packs, real life, are you going to be willing to spend as much money on MTGO? And I mean, it's the same argument with Arena, right? We have well, you joked about having four different formats because there's also competitive, but you have paper, Arena, and online. And at least with the packs, you can get the option of getting an Arena code in there. So those are somewhat complimentary, not very, but somewhat. Versus online, there is none. So, right? Are you buying the card? It's three separate economies. So the card might be 0.03 tickets on online, and then you go to buy it in real life, and it's here. I'll give you one. Visions, that's in the Commander upgrade. The paper copy is $23.30 right now. I think it's a great card. How much does it cost in online? It's $1.06. Is that what came up?
I might even be less than that, actually, because again, I'm not sure if I pulled up the right border.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, you just they do kind of compete and eat against each other. Wizards
and
could.
Arena is one wild card.
Yeah, exactly. Wizards, right? Yeah. Yep. Because they're all the same on Arena. All rares are the same value. All mythics are the same value. Could Wizards address it yeah, will they address it? Probably not. I mean, how long?
It's hard to address. Like,
just because it's hard doesn't mean you can't do.
But, like, the reason why everything is so cheap on MTGO is because it's easy to move cards around. Like, it's the reason cards are, it's hard for a rare to go below like 25 cents, even though, like, that's worth nothing, is because it takes money to put it in a stamp and mail it to someone, or hold it in a case until someone buys it.
Yeah, that's the problem. They don't have all that with online. So that's the part of it. But I don't
that's
know.
That's going to push prices down. But meanwhile, prices are going to get pushed up because it's because of how cards are leaving the system. In particular, how there are fewer mythics than normal because of the way redemption works. And take a full set of each thing, of a full like place, like a whole, like one of every card at a time. So obviously, if there are fewer mythics, if you subtract one from each, it's going to. One redeemed set will do nothing to commons, uncommons, or even rares as much, but it'll do more to mythics.
Yeah.
I wish we somehow had information about how much Wizards makes from, I guess, their paper product, MTGO product, and Arena as like three separate products. I feel like I have no clue or idea.
If I had to guess, I would say like the most revenue comes from paper still, because that's because like a lot of revenue from paper is people buying a pack or two at Walmart. So that's doing a lot. Arena probably has the most margin by far, because not even if you like try to amortize the R&D between like even the main two, that it's just that I bet Arena, because it don't cost anything for the printing, and printing is what eats up a lot of the cost. Like, as we've seen with other digital card games, you don't need to have the cost that much if you don't have actual paper and stuff and logistics of moving that paper around. And then MTGO right now for Wizards is just a licensing deal. Daybreak gives Wizards some money. I'm not sure how the royalties and such. They give Wizards some money, and then Wizards gives them god books and support, and that's about it. And then Daybreak makes whatever else they need.
For actual numbers, what I'm able to figure out from what I'm able to pull from the reports, it looks like Wizards, the actual value is not enough. They do not make enough money, and they want to continue making
more
money.
It's sister, we want more than more that.
So there you go. I know it's not an actual number, but I believe that's the concept. Not enough.
MOAR? Yeah, that's more than MORE, right? Yeah, okay.
Is that cost? Yeah, we want more. We just need more. How can we get more? Could we cut more staff? Is there any way we can cut staff? We really can't cut any more. We're going to be bare bones. I bet we can do it. And it may be difficult, but there has to be some way that they can more fully integrate them into each other. At the very least, I don't know why Arena and the packs don't have a way of like linking them to where you get the one, you know, you get the code and you can redeem that in Arena. I know why they do that, because right then they don't make as much money.
Yeah.
Because you have to buy it separate and then you're trying to keep it. Imagine when you got your...
But
you
there went are products draft that do that you buy in paper and will give you a code for the same thing on Arena. Like, I think like the starter packs do that.
The starter packs do it, so it can be done. But see, they do that, right? That's your first hit. Your first hit's free, in quotes. Your first hit's free. So then they link you in and you do that, and then you're like, wait, what? And imagine if you went to a draft or a sealed event or whatever, and those packs that you got had codes in there, and then you could redeem those in for Arena. Not six random other packs from the pre-release, but the packs like what you have. Might it be a little more difficult? Yeah, it might be. I mean, how long has Wizards been around? How long have they been doing Magic? You can't tell me it can't be done. Don't other card games do that?
So you want to have half of the card face be a QR code?
I don't know if it has to be a QR code. Couldn't it actually be like, so in the actual the pack, the card, like
instead of your random ad card, it could be a QR code on
QR code that's links then to the cards that are in that pack, right? They know the cards that when they collate them, do they not when they go in the packs? It's an honest question. I don't know.
Honestly, I'm not sure if they can do it 100% of the time. Like I remember back when they were originally considering DFCs, they couldn't like put a token in it and like the card that makes the token in the same pack 100% of the time. Meanwhile, with Battle Bond, they can do that now. They probably can't do like 100% of the time have these are the 14 cards in the pack.
So do we let perfect be the enemy of good?
Yes. Because if you advertise, if you buy this pack in paper and you get the same pack online and it's not, then you get sued. Doesn't matter if it's...
But at a rate, say 75%, even 50% is better than zero.
But then you look like you're a shoddy product if you have to say, like, this might work half the time, well, or one in four times it won't work.
If it looks like a duck, and it walks like a duck, and it quacks
and it
like
curls a duck, like a rainbow, that's a foil like magic a card.
Yeah, like, at some point, maybe the corporate overlords need to have their feet held to the fire. I don't know. Just, yeah, they could do it. I think they could. I think they want to do it because it won't.
$7 in exchange for that?
Well, what's the rate going at right now? How much do collectors cost?
I meant for like normal play boosters. For well, a normal play standard boosters, set. Do you want those $7?
$4.95 right now? Is that what it is right now for a play
booster?
Depends
on it. Like, I know in my store, they're actually $4.50, but they're generally a little lower price than like
ours what Walmart is, ours does. Is $4.95, so like $5 is what we paid down here.
Yeah.
So I don't know, $5 versus $7, but then I get all the cards that I got in that draft, those packs I opened or I just randomly bought.
And that's
I also
the other
get an electronic
thing,
version.
That's another thing, like draft. So like you'll open that, presumably you'll keep the thing, and then so you don't get the same cards on in arena and in paper. And then don't forget about like when Star City opens up 5,000 packs, do you want to have them be selling the inserts? That's another thing. There's all
yes,
these complications.
Yeah.
That would save me money.
Yeah, I don't...
I will abuse the system if it benefits.
Yeah. And so, like, yeah, they open them and then they're selling. It's like, okay, so you have the ability to have those cards in there? Like, yeah. I don't know why I wouldn't want those. Hell, even if they did them as a grab bag. They're like, yeah, we don't really know what's on these QR code, you know, the ones that came in, but we will sell those too.
that'd be fun. That would be
cool. You get some random grab bag, and then you're like, oh, cool. And then you're like, oh, sweet. Now you've got all these.
And a QR code scanning orgy. Yeah, I mean, that sounds
yeah,
like fun.
Just be like, blah, just unleash it all, especially with all these newer with the play boosters, how many rares and mythics you could get in a pack. Hell, if anything, Wizards should be all over this. This sounds like even more closer to gambling. And if there's one thing that Magic players love, it's variance and gambling.
Getting real close. Like I said, we're getting to that Bellatro secret lair there, which I thought was pretty good.
The deck right of playing cards. Yeah.
I guess this has still been, it's still been confusing. I mean, they view it as three different products on their main website. I just always, it's always been very strange how little synergy, I guess, or we all love the word synergy, but between
I mean,
these kind
again,
of three
when
different
paper and MTGO started, they didn't want and they were worried that MTGO was going to like take over paper, and that's why we have redemption. And that was the other part that people didn't want to put their money into something that was entirely digital. And as a bonus, because digital could be paper, we could charge the same price for both, at least nominally.
So
yeah,
yeah,
like
so
one of the
I guess,
first digital economy things like that.
I mean, it was instead of packs of cigarettes, you had tickets being sort of like the unofficial currency of all.
Yeah.
So I guess this is just where you know how do they view arena? You know, is this truly just a as you mentioned? Is this something that is an like I get something in my paper pack of cards? Are they hoping people will completely abandon paper to go to just arena?
No, again, I think they want arena to be both. A separate thing. We've seen that with alchemy cards. They want like the arena audience and the paper audience to be different, but with limited overlap. Like obviously, going back to competitive, there's an arena path and a paper path, and they only come together at the Pro Tour. In other words, at very, very top level.
I just feel like they need to differentiate even more at this point. I feel like it's still too blurred. I mean, and you're right, they've defined very differences like alchemy packs are the different size you buy them on.
Universes Beyond is a big difference, and like legacy formats, like maybe Arena will get Commander this decade. We'll see. They probably want it to, but I don't know how practical it is. And they obviously want some differentiation. Like, I'm sure if they really wanted to, they could put something close to Vintage Cube on Arena tomorrow. But I think they're specifically letting MTGO have that space.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that, you know, why would they care? Yeah. You know, if they're just doing like a licensing deal, like they, I guess I don't know how much that's worth. I feel like they would make more money shoving something like that into Arena than whatever their licensing deal is with Daybreak.
Yeah, but I don't know what the money is, or maybe like it's a percentage of revenue at Daybreak. And like we've already seen, like with stuff like the Remix Draft, people don't like Cube as much on Arena as they do on MTGO relative to their playbase numbers.
Oh, okay. So again, I guess you, like you said, they are looking at different audiences.
Yeah.
I just feel like they should just call Arena, it shouldn't be called Magic the Gathering Arena at some point. Is it just, is it like KFC chickens? Like, no, this is not Kentucky Fried Chicken. This is KFC chicken. It's not Magic the Gathering. This is MTG Arena.
There's a large contingent of people who play Arena who want it to be paper. See the revolt, why we have Explorer, and why we're probably going to have Modern by the time the decade is over.
Are we going to have Modern by the time we have the decade over?
I mean, we'll have certainly Arena Modern or whatever they call it. If not, they're stupid, because, again, they're really close to having Modern, at least relatively. Like, they need another set of fetch lands. They need, like, a couple Cascade cards. Like, and a lot of the stuff they already have, like, is either programmed in or the mechanics are programmed in, thus it should be relatively simple to program in the actual cards because of all the bonus sheets and then the fact that Modern Horizons 3 is going to be on Arena for some reason.
For some reason, maybe they're trying to bring things together. Maybe that's the reason.
No, because it makes some money, and because Modern Horizons 2 was their highest selling set besides Lord of the Rings.
Don't you think it's possible that they might make... I wish we had the soundboard. I miss the soundboard right now.
Yeah, I cannot wet fart well here.
Don't you think it's possible that by them having it on there, that they would actually increase their earnings by trying to bring the paper and Arena closer to one another as opposed to separate?
I mean, I think they want their cake and eat it too. They want the Arena-only players who like Alchemy and like Historic to be served. But they also want the paper players to play Alchemy. No, not to play Arena and play the Arena equivalent format. The paper equivalent formats like Normal Draft and Standard End.
Isn't Alchemy one of the...
And Timeless to an extent, even.
Isn't Alchemy one of the lowest played formats on Arena anyways? I thought it's Alchemy.
It depends on how you look at it. The problem is with Alchemy is that like they default all the new players into Alchemy, so those get counted as the stats.
Oh, so
so few people actually use those cards, I bet. Because unless you're playing another new player, nobody's using Alchemy cards.
Yeah.
Lucan decks, it's like, nope, Alchemy is just deserted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's weird. Like, apparently, if you go, like, into actual ranks for Alchemy queues, there's, like, a bunch of people way at the bottom of the ladder because those are the people who are new and are just trying ranked for the first time. Then there's a bunch of people at the top of the ladder who know that the only people in the queues are these new players, so they're just using it to easily rank up in a, because all the constructed ranks are the same. And I think that it's even more in best of three Alchemy, which exists for some reason.
Yeah, I'll just the end of my point will be, I think Wizards could do better by trying to get them closer to each other as opposed to separate from each other.
Yeah, the only problem is that's a huge risk. Like, if you make Arena the best place to play and then suddenly the paper goes away, then you have a disaster, which is why they're trying to hedge all of their bets to avoid that. Like, we saw that with the original MTGO. We saw that even with the pandemic, how they tried to get things when everything to Arena by necessity and Spell Table. Like, I think they got lucky that Spell Table became a thing during the pandemic. Otherwise, paper might have gone much worse than it ended up being, instead of going back better than ever. Between Spell Table and the speculator boom.
I have, Yeah, I just don't know. Just as a new player, I would say it would be confusing. You're right. I guess if I was more, no, would I be more likely to see a pack at Walmart versus like running into some sort of advertising online? I feel like arenas.
You're more likely to see it at Walmart. That's 100%. Especially if you're not like an actual person who plays like games. Like, sure, if you're a Hearthstone player, you might see a ad for Arena or for the Pro Tour online. But if you're a person who goes into the Walmart aisles and sees, here's some cool guy on the front with a cowboy hat, let's buy this and see what it is.
Yeah,
I think it's more like a ton of Magic's audience, and that's what the established player base doesn't understand.
See, I guess I would argue, and this is maybe just as having children who have now grown up, where like YouTube, Roblox, that has been kind of their main exposure to a lot of entertainment options. I feel like they'd be more likely to run into an ad for like MTG Arena than they ever would pay attention to the weird hidden, you know, aisle of stuff at Target these days that has all that stuff in there. It's usually way in the back or hidden in the media by the books these days. I feel like they'd be more likely to run into a digital ad for something like Arena.
But again, like it's different things. And it's hard for someone to go from Arena to paper, but it's much easier for them to go from paper to Arena. Because the entry barrier to Arena, at least to try it, is nothing. While the entry barrier for paper is like, best case, you find a local card store and get like a free starter deck.
So wouldn't you want them to start in Arena then? If I could sort of guide Arena.
I'm saying that like, in terms of revenue, most people are starting because they see something in a card shop. At least the heavy players. Because if you get something at a card shop, you're more likely to stay. Well, I'm sure there are a bazillion people who have like played Arena, maybe played a couple matches, says, this isn't for me, and then dropped it.
Yeah, but I feel like that's the way it is with most free-to-play games. And they are the, like,
yeah, but
I bet Wizards, if they could say we can get Monopoly Go money by doing this, they would do it.
But like Monopoly Go is a different type of thing because that's trying to be so easy to play. Magic is not easy to play.
Tell me about it. All these years, and it's still
amazed that it still grows, because as it gets more complicated, I as a new player, how that would ever work these days, I don't know.
Yeah,
like the way you get into it is either you go through Arena or you have a commander group and they throw you in the deep end. And apparently that's how most people learn how to play these days. One of those two paths.
Yeah, I would argue for where I go to draft, there's a small group of us. There might be, you know, one table of 8-10 people, and there might be 2 to 3 tables of commander drafts or commander games going on. Yeah, commander is quite popular, and it's an entryway into Magic.
Yeah, especially since commander is where they focus their universes beyond, which is the newest untapped potential. We'll see what happens when the Marvel set comes out, and to a lesser extent, Final Fantasy.
I feel like Commander should actually be like the fourth Magic product, like even separate from Arena and all the other ones. I feel like it pretty much is already
because like they have your competitive paper and you have your Commander. Except that like half the cards in every competitive paper set are for Commander these days. And that's having adverse effects because you need to power creep Commander so people keep buying cards, because apparently interesting ideas ain't good enough anymore.
They're not. Unless that interesting idea makes you more money, Vincent, then that's what we want. Okay. I think we solved it, guys. I think we came up with a definitive answer how to fix all of this to make Magic the hybrid, digital paper utopia a real thing.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of power creep, you want to talk about some Modern Horizons 3?
Sure. Yeah, you're showing us some of the flip commanders. Where's the best place for me to find the leaks?
And since even though OTJ officially came out on Friday, we already have leaks for the next set because that's like 6 weeks away.
Okay. Where would I find some pictures of these maybe cards that exist?
Reddit. Or
if you're talking about, I don't trust Reddit. I'm an old man, Vincent. How about 4chan? Will that get it to me?
Probably if you look hard enough.
Oh, I'm looking hard enough. I don't even have to look that hard there. All right. Tell me about a Vincent and I will. I'm going to use the theater of my mind. It has not yet been destroyed by video games.
Link.
Oh, thank
the
you.
Four. Yeah. So.
Oh, wait. I have to derail you for 1 second, Vincent. Trying to remember who, Brent, you might know this. Who was the senator back in like the 90s that Brit was rallying against all violent video games?
Lieberman.
Lieberman. Thank you.
He passed away recently, too.
Yeah. But
that's why it came to my mind. They had talked about. Because he kind of never gave up that fight. Even though I didn't agree with him, I guess I have to admire his tenacity with that one. All right, I now have the link pulled up. I have delayed you long.
So, when they did the first look at Modern Horizons 3 and, like, 10 other sets at the same time, we got a look at a Johnny. It's like, so if you remember back to Magic Origins, we had the five planeswalkers and their like sparking moments shown us they were creatures and then they were planeswalkers, and then so look, you can play these creatures as your commanders and you can play like Nissa and Chandra as your commander. Of course now you can play Nissa as your commander besides, because she's everyone's been de-sparked. That's again beside the point. So then they did it in Magic 2019 for Brinicole Bolas, and now they're doing it again. We saw a Johnny in the initial first look, and now because of leaks, and because there are always leaks, we have the other four. So the gimmick with these is that they're single color, but they flip into a gold color, enemy gold. So like as we saw with the Johnny, he flipped into a red-white one. And like he has abilities, and notably one of them benefits if you have a red thing, in addition to him being normally white. So you don't have to play him in a red-white deck, but you benefit if you play him in a red-white deck. Yeah.
Yeah. Vincent, you know, I have some friends that are colorblind. Is there anything on the flip side of these flip commanders that tells you what their color identity is, aside from me like seeing the colors on the border?
The color indicator is supposed to do that.
Where, like that little sphere?
Little circle. Yeah, the little circle.
Ooh, I feel bad for them. Pipeline. Okay.
That's been around for a while, since original Innistrad at least.
Okay, so that is the official color indicator. That must get really confusing if it's like three or more colors.
They have a three-color one, but they don't have a four or five-color one. Like, they have one for like five colors, said this is all colors. They know that's a problem if you have more colors. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I know there's one that has a three-color color indicator, though I couldn't tell you what it is off the back of my head. Yeah.
No, that's good. I just, you know, take it for, and just honestly, as I'm getting older and my eyesight is changing, you know, sometimes written text is easier to interpret than sometimes small color gradients.
Yeah.
Okay. Color indicator. Got it.
Okay. So the choices they have for commanders are interesting. So for the original Magic Origins, we had Gideon and Chandra and Jace and Nissa and Liliana. And then we had Nicol Bolas. So our choices for this one are a Johnny, Grist, Tamiyo, Relzarek, and Sorin. Yeah. A very interesting choice, probably because they had to warp it to make the enemy color part work.
Okay. The Zellos, it seemed like kind of odd choices, like Ral, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, people were thinking it might be Dak, since he got kind of unceremoniously booted in the War of the Spark. But I guess Raul is more interesting for what they want to do. Even if it's not exactly good, but we'll get to that. So, you have a preference on what we want to talk about first?
I guess just inherently, I'd probably be most interested in probably the Grist. But that's just personal, because I like insect creatures.
Yeah. So do you remember when we first saw Grist, what he did?
And I was actually typing that in as you were talking. Yeah. I was trying to remember how it started.
Because he's a weird one. Like everywhere except on the battlefield, he's a creature as well. He's like a 1/1 insect. So like you could Coco for him. You could Cord for him. Like you could reanimate him if you wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah. That was his gimmick. So it's weird that he has this another creature one. Because he could also be your commander, too.
already, pretty much, because he is a creature when he's not in your hand.
So,
not in the battlefield, excuse me.
Yeah. So, Grist Voracious Lava is a single green for a legendary creature insect that with Death Touch, 1/2. Whenever it or another creature enters the battlefield under your control, if it entered from your graveyard or you cast it from your graveyard, you may pay green if you do exile it and return it transformed to get Grist the Plague Swarm. So it's a 3 loyalty planeswalker. Create a 1/1 black and green insect creature token, then mill 2 cards. Put a Death Touch counter on the token if a black card was milled this way. There's your tie-in. -2, destroy target artifact or enchantment. And -6, for each creature card in your graveyard, create a token that's a copy of it, except the 1/1 black and green insect. So, 1 mana planeswalker, again.
Yep.
And this is probably going to be the most broken of the 5, because if it's, like, obviously you need to do a lot of work with it, because as we'll see, like, all the other ones help you get to their flip condition in some way, but Grist does not. You need to have other things. Though, granted, there are a lot of ways to reanimate stuff. As a reminder, we have Unearth and multiple other types of Unearths in Modern these days.
Yeah, and all very cheap. Oh,
yes. Yeah. In addition to other things, like, maybe this could be, like, literal dredge with something like Prized Amalgam if you wanted to. Like, maybe that'll be the weird, like, historic thing you do with it. But I think Unearth is on Arena. I'm not sure. I think the white Unearth is on Arena. There's, like, one that's, like, literally white Unearth, but it doesn't have cycling.
Yeah, Unearth was one of my all-time favorite comments.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's...
So, and it's an issue that you brought up the one, I guess, one casting cost commander, because we have another one
in this set. Yeah, so if we get to Tamiyo, which is Tamiyo Inquisitive Student, so it costs single blue, it's an Ultry Flyer, Moonfolk Wizard. Whenever it attacks, you investigate to create the clue. And when you draw your third card in a turn, exile Tamiyo, then return to the battlefield transformed under her owner's control. She transforms into Tamiyo Seasoned Scholar, two loyalty planeswalker, and then +2, until your next turn, whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker control, it gets -1/-0 until end of turn, -3, return target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. If it's a green card, add 1 mana of any color. -7, draw cards equal to half the number of cards in your library rounded up. You get an emblem with you have no maximum hand size. Yeah. So this one I think is going to sneakily be one of the best ones, though I'm not sure if Modern is the best place for it. Like, they give you one guess for one card that might easily let you draw 3 cards in a turn.
Which one lets you, that you do, then you put them back? Yes. Is that Brainstorm?
Yes.
I was trying to remember which one's worded that exact way.
Yeah. That helps you draw multiple cards in a turn. That'll be... So I think this is an easily a Delver card. Because, though I'm not sure how much Delver really wants the backside. Like, when I was reading this before, like, I didn't realize that the -3 you can't use right away. So you have to +2 it to start.
Yeah, so you can't, and probably on purpose, I just don't want you to.
Yeah. Like, if it's good in Modern, it's probably because it's an Ultry for 1, which helps in a format where a stupid 2/1 is one of the most prevalent creatures.
True, but interesting that makes, I guess, that you have to attack with it to at least get the investigate, although that may be not used that often in that setting.
Yeah. Like, first couple times I read this, I assumed it was enter the battlefield or attacks, like a Titan trigger, because that's everything else. But I guess that must have been too broken. Like, one of the trends of this batch of things, Johnny included, is that they're not trying to break the format. Like, we'll get to it, but I think, like, other than Grist being probably breakable in some form, I think a Johnny is the most generically abusable, like, generically strong. I'll pull that up for reference. Go back to Scryfall, and then... Because that's the one that's been officially spoiled.
Okay, so that one we...
Yeah. Pull that up. Give me a second. See if this can be edited out.
Out of a Johnny's.
Yeah. I just went to Modern Horizons 3. Yeah. Yeah, a Johnny Nicol Pariah.
There we go. Okay, I've got him.
Got the link in chat. Yeah, so when it's a one and a white for a 1/2 legendary cat warrior. When it ETBs, create a 2/1 white cat warrior creature token. Whenever one or more other cats you control die, you may exile Johnny and return him transformed under owner's control, which gives you a Johnny Nakadal Avenger. So it starts at 3. +2, put a +1/+1 counter on each cat you control. 0, create a 2/1 white cat warrior creature token. When you do, if you control a red permanent other than a Johnny, he deals damage to the number of creatures you control to any target. At -4, each opponent gets Cataclysm. Actually, not Cataclysm, because it's just artifact, creature, enchantment, and planeswalker from non-land.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't do land.
Sacrifice to lands. Yeah, it's not... Yeah, poor Johnny. He got to do lands once and never again. Because that was back when Armageddon was still something we could reasonably grant.
All right, yeah, so this one, like you said, seems to be the easiest to self-enable itself, and you're getting...
Yeah, and just strong, because it's 3/3. Yeah, it's the 3/3 for 2 across 2 bodies. But getting back to the spoilers, next up we have Ral Monsoon Mage, which is 1 and a red for a 1/3 human wizard. Instants and sorcery spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell during your turn, flip a coin. If you lose the flip, it deals 1 damage to you. If you win the flip, you may exile and transform him, etc., etc. And if he transforms into Ral Leyland Prodigy, yeah, he starts at 2 loyalty, but he enters the battlefield with an additional loyalty counter on him for each instant and sorcery spell you've cast this turn. So he's got +1, instant sorceries cost 1 less to cast.
Which means it's going to have at least a 1, because even flip it, you have had to have cast a certain sorcery.
So yeah, +1, instant, the thing that his front side already had, -2, he deals 2 damage, divide as you choose among 1 or 2 targets, draw a card if you control a blue permanent other than Ral, and then -8, exile the top 8 cards of your library. You may cast instant and sorcery spells from among them this turn without paying their mana costs. And take a guess what mechanic this wants you to use it with.
Like what, Storm? Like what are we doing this
with? Yes. Yeah. Obviously this is...
I was trying to think of something besides Storm. I was like, that just seems to be Storm.
Yeah, it's clearly trying to be a Storm commander, but I honestly don't think it's that good. Like, is this better than like a generic thing like Brawl or even Goblin Electromancer that has the generic sorceries you cast cost 1 less to cast? Like, I get the point is that if you get to 6 spells and then get to transform it, you'll get to do the -8 and then go off even harder. But the question is it, what are the chances it's going to kill you first? Especially since you're already taking a bunch of...
Yeah, I'm honestly
off of your lands and like your fetch shot mana base, this, I'm sure. Yeah,
I had just assumed it was doing 1 damage to my opponent. That was my assumption. You know, just kind of based on power, I was like, oh, but you're right. It's dealing damage to you. I'm honestly surprised that is what they did.
Like you have to do that, and then like they probably have Bowmasters if you're drawing stuff, so you don't want to. That gonna make Storm hostile. Like, even if you get to your 6 things, you still have to win a flip at some point. It's better than I originally thought it was. I thought if you won the flip, you had to transform him.
Yeah,
but
it's me.
Yeah, I think, that's a good thing. Because otherwise, that then just doesn't really work. I think this is the worst one by a mile. But then again, they probably don't want Storm to be broken anyway. That's not a great format. Maybe they'll do this, then like unban Seething Song or something. Yeah, like you could probably.
Because that one seems the least interesting to me as well. So,
yeah, like this is obvious what you want to do with it. Then again, the next one's obvious what you want to do with it. Sorin of House Markov, which is 1 and a black for a 1/4 legendary creature human noble with lifelink. And Extort, that's the one where you can tack an additional black or white to any spell to drain your opponent for 1. And then, at the beginning of your post-combat ban phase, if you gain 3 or more life this turn, you may exile, transform, and blah blah blah. Into Sorin, Ravenous Neonate, which also has Extort. You can +2 create a food token, -1, it deals damage equal to the amount of life you gain this turn to any target, and then -6, gain control of the target creature, becomes a vampire and is new to other creature types. Put a lifelink counter on it if you control a white permanent other than that creature or Sorin. So, even though you'll never use that ability, because this card does one thing and one thing only. One-shot your opponent with Martyr of Sands.
Yeah, what to say that. I was surprised I was only a minus one for the...
Yes.
Nuke them for the life.
Yes, this is a way for Martyrs of Sands decks to actually win. Obviously, you're taking risk putting a black card in your deck where you want everything to be white, but I think this is worth it.
But that's a good point. But since it's now for the color identity being white black, when I'm casting it as Sorn of Markov, is it at that point still considered?
It's a black card on its front side, so that'll be reveal it to that. Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't quite sure if you could count it as its backside for like a Martyr of Sands trigger.
No, you always have to do double face cards as their front side.
Okay.
So yeah, those are our five flip planeswalkers. So which you think is the best?
Well, I really dislike Martyr of Sands deck, so I'm mad with Torin highest, is that just looks like a really annoying interaction, in all honesty.
I mean, I guess I'd rather the Martyr of Sands decks kill you rather than take 20 years to actually win.
That's true. Yes, otherwise, boy. I guess if I had to pick one I would like to play, I know for some reason Tamio would be the one that I would.
Yeah.
Sounds. I like Brainstorm, so I like the idea of pooping that thing out quickly. And then probably put Grist as my number two, just because I'm not playing competitive here for Modern, but as an insect tribe, that'd be fun, I think, for that one.
Yeah. I mean, like, Grist is just like, yeah. Like, Grist, it's weird because, like, he's just mostly a value engine, but is good because it's a 1-mana 1/2 death touch on his front side that has multiple benefits. Meanwhile, Sorin's value is all in the combo, and Rowl's only good in the one deck, and then Tommy, you need, is good in one type of deck as well. Like, that's the nice thing about these cards, is that they're all powerful in their context, but they're all very, very narrow. There's no pitch elementals in this batch of blockers, and there's no, like, Urza's or Yawgmoth or anything, or Roggevans or anything. They're all, like, they're not multi-format things. Like, you still might have to ban, like, Martyr eventually if you need to get Sorin is too good, but that's just because we push too hard to make one deck good. As opposed to, here's a card that you put in, like, any red deck or any black deck because giving you free Thoughtseize is way too good, even ignoring the fact that you could combo with it.
Yeah. Well, I guess this actually makes me... I typically have not had a huge interest in the Modern Horizons sets, but this seems more interesting.
And this will be on Arena, so you'll get to play them.
Yeah, so I'll actually get to see them, which is kind of cool. Well, I won't ask where these came from. I'll just accept that they are real. They seem quite realistic based on everything we're seeing.
Yeah. They all fit the enemy color pattern and such, and then presumably it'll be 5 minutes until we start real previews for Modern Horizons 3.
That's what it feels like, is that it's got to be soon, because Thunder Junction is fully, Outlaw's Thunder Junction fully out, so you got to be queuing up for the, I need my constant dopamine hit of new Magic cards.
Yeah.
Well, Vincent, this is a pretty Magic-packed podcast, so I want to say thank you for this.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is not Thunder. That is hopefully a kid that has not damaged themselves. I'm going to go figure out what happened. No screams followed. That is a good hint. But yeah, Vincent, thank you for joining. Brent had to hop off a little bit early just for some family stuff. And yeah, I'm Tom. And join us on Discord. We'll have I'll have to try to make like a nice short link to our Discord so I can actually say it at the end of the podcast here.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I guess probably the easiest way to get the link would be to follow myself on Twitter, which is PSG Reader, R-E-A-D-E-R. And yeah, we'll be coming up about once a week. And
isn't it in the show notes too?
It'll be in the show notes as well. So if you're seeing it, you know, through your podcast feed, you can also find it there as well. Good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll get a nice short link up so I can verbally say it. But yeah. Thank you, Vincent, and yeah, join us next week for probably more Modern Horizons 3. Would not be a surprise.
And hopefully a recording that isn't as cursed.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. I have no idea, but we got there.
Yeah.
All right, Vincent, thank you very much. And I'm going to stop recording.